Five little pumpkins sitting at a gate. The first one said, "My, it's getting late." The second one said, "There's witches in the air." And the third one said, "But we don't care." The fourth one said, "Let's run, run, run." And the fifth one said, "Isn't Halloween fun?" Ooh, went the wind, and clap went the light. The five little pumpkins rolled out of sight.
Well, happy Halloween, my friends, and welcome to our Halloween edition of So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling. And you'll only hear us right here each and every week on 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Greg Audell, and along with a team saturated in talent, Drs. Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton, and Hank Rubicek, our engineer and media relations scout, Tatiana Gago, and of course, Floyd the Wonder Dog. We bring you great storytellers, usually usual folks, but with unusual stories to tell, who take us on astonishing journeys from bringing us back safely to the planet. Our storytellers take us on an astonishing journeys before bringing us safely back to the present. November 3rd, my friends, is the last day for our fall fun drive, and tonight is the last night to call in to let us know that you want to hear human stories, the kind that connect hearts and souls to remain a component in the eclectic KPFT inventory. As we've been saying for weeks, listener-sponsored programming is for the community, and we need you to donate generously to let the leaders of Pacifica know that this kind of program matters, it matters to you, and it's worth supporting. Calling in allows them to hear the interest, so go to your phones right now and call one of our steadfast volunteers at 713-526-5738. Again, that is 713-526-5738, and I'll thank you on air unless you would prefer that we not. You don't like the phone? Well, that's not a problem. You can just go online to kpft.org. Click the donations button, choose the form of payment, and this is important. Scroll to So What's Your Story is the show you'd like to support, and that'll make all the difference, my friends. I'll check in with Pledge Central in just a bit to see how we're doing, but let's get started with tonight's Fun Fest by celebrating Halloween. Is there a more fun holiday? I don't think so. It's a day storytellers love because of the great stories with which this day of spookiness is associated. Now, my guest tonight is actually not spooky, but she is a respected psychic, Diane Gremmel, who is a psychic medium and teacher with over 25 years' experience. She's been cited on many of the best of lists and has read for thousands of clients. And I'll be honest, I did quite a bit of research because I wanted someone very credible who I really respected. So I put a lot of work into finding just the right guest for tonight, and I believe that is Diane. From 2010 until 2012, she hosted the program Psychic World on the SATV network and was featured on Travel Channel's Ghost Stories. As a teacher, she's worked with over 200 students of psychic development and mediumship. I'm hoping we talk more about that. That is most intriguing to me. She is part of the paranormal investigative team at Lone Star Spirits Paranormal and enjoys combining scientific theory with intuitive knowledge. She considers it a calling of sorts to educate others about the energetic world that she feels we can all access. That's something else we'll want to explore. As with all of us at So What's Your Story, Diane is a fellow animal lover and considers communicating with animals to be among her greatest joys. And she was telling me a little bit about Floyd just before the show. Diane's stories will be complemented by stories from Gettysburg, a place Hank visited just a couple of weeks ago, with some haunting results. But Diane, Welcome to So What's Your Story? I am so thrilled to have you here.
I am so thrilled to be here. It's I can't think of a better day than Halloween to have a psychic on talking about psychic stuff.
Well, thank you. And I wanted to be sure that no one thought we were making light of it, because this is not something to make light of, but I still think it's a great night to have you on.
Absolutely. And, you know, as someone who sees what I would call paranormal things every day, it's a great time to get to share those things with everybody else. Might as well get a little scared tonight, right?
Absolutely. And before we get into your stories, yeah, I have a couple of questions I got to ask you.
Okay.
When did you first learn you had psychic tendencies? Was this something that was in your family, or was this totally new to you and them?
I really believe that every single person on this planet has some type of ability to pick up energy in some way. So all of us are psychic, but I had some really unusual things happen as a child, like seeing a departed grandfather and reading my mother's mind, that kind of flipped the switch and made it clear that this was something I was good at.
You know, I was in the car one day with a friend of mine. He was four at the time, and I was driving, and, you know, I've been told this is a question to ask young children. And I said, you know, where were you before you were born? He goes, in mommy's tummy. I said, well, what about before that? He said, oh, I was in the ground. I said, why were you in the ground? And he looked at me and goes, I don't know. That's where the people put me.
There you go. I don't
think he would have picked up on, you know, the custom or anything else at that age if it wasn't something there.
No, children especially are psychic, because if you consider the left brain is like an operating system, the right brain, that's your radio receiver. Those kids have not filled their mind yet with all of these ideas about what cannot happen.
Right.
And therefore, they just experience it as it is.
Well, he's 12 years old now, and he's always angry at me. He goes, why didn't you ask me my name? We could have Googled myself.
I always tell people, if a child keeps telling you, I was on a ship and they threw me off the ship, to listen and maybe ask a question now and then.
Like, yeah.
I have a client whose daughter sees Grandpa all the time, but Grandpa died 6 years ago.
Wow.
And the little girl was about 2 years old when he passed, but she still says she sees Grandpa. So what I said is, why don't you ask her if he has a message? And she said, I never thought of that. But it would be nice to know, does Grandpa have anything
Absolutely.
To say?
Well, you know, TV shows often showcase a psychic charged with solving a mystery. And usually within a one-hour parameter.
Absolutely.
Your first story, in fact, is about a class you were teaching that helped solve the case of a missing person.
Yeah.
Will you tell us that story?
Well, I teach a class, psychic development, at least once a year. And I work with all my students to really learn how to tap into the right brain, just pay attention to what they see and feel and hear, and not worry about whether it seems logical. So I was teaching such a class, and the students were really, really talented. I had a lady call from California whose son was missing. He was a very well-known artist, and when he left the exhibit in New York City, he loaded what was left of his artwork up in his car. He had several thousand dollars with him from the art show, and he simply disappeared. So his mother, after a while, became very, very concerned, because it's hard to report an adult missing because there's just so many different parameters that people want to check out. But eventually, his car was found. It had been set on fire and left in a sort of out-of-the-way place. So the police said they felt like he was probably not alive, simply because the art is gone, the money is gone, the car has been burned, and he's nowhere. So what I told her right away was that I felt he was alive, and I would not go out on a limb that way very often, because when you tell someone, yes, they're definitely dead or they're definitely alive, you better be very sure that that person is. And since the best psychics in the world are, maybe if they're right 80 or 90% of the time, they're wrong 10 or 20% of the time, you have to be really careful. But I said, as far as I can feel, he is alive. And I felt like he was having a lot of emotional issues, and that's why he disappeared. So I asked her if she would mind my taking this to the class. And what I proposed to do was simply give them this gentleman's name and let them know he is missing. He was last seen in New York City, and find out what they picked up. And what was stunningly, and anyone out there who's listening who was one of this class, y'all will remember this. I was so proud because every single person separately wrote down what they felt about the missing person. And then when we got all of the descriptions together and heard them together for the first time, it was fascinating. Because while I had picked up something about a tiki torch and a gentleman that had joined him and that he was with this person, someone else picked up red rock, and someone else picked up a stream of water, and someone else picked up a lot of rock formations. And when we put all of it together, we started to realize it sounds like he's in a national forest. So the great news was I was able to call his mother that night and let her know, guess what? 12 students out of 12 students say he is alive and well, and 12 students out of 12 students say they think he is possibly out camping. Well, what this did for her, imagine a lady who is convinced that her son is dead being told he might be alive. And she, of course, went straight to his city, straight to his apartment, and looked and found that there was his camping equipment missing from the storage area. So, yay, he is alive. And the reason I think it's important, I believe most crimes are solved by the police. And this isn't solving a crime, but when people are willing to listen to what an intuitive has to say, there's a really good chance that it's going to help in some way. And that's, I have a friend, the longest case I've ever seen, named Noreen Rainier, who is an acclaimed police psychic. And she actually, they had a thing on Court TV where it took 20 years to capture the murderer. But when they finally looked at the murderer and looked at the picture that she'd drawn with a police artist, it was uncanny that 20 years previously, she'd gotten it right.
Wow.
So I think it's about paying attention to the possibility that the people around you, the police have psychics coming out of their phones every time there's a major case, and everyone wants to solve it, so it gets hard for them. But if you, I find individual officers will look for someone credible to work with, as opposed to police departments who most of the time will not really put their sticker on anybody. So I thank the ones that are willing to listen and take the help, because I think psychic ability and right brain thinking has something to offer.
What was the resolution with the young man?
The young man, this is what's fascinating. It turned out he was indeed in California. It's the same state where his mother was living. He was in a national park. He spent several weeks in the park. He had gone to the park to hide and burned his own car, believe it or not, because he was starting to have paranoid episodes. So he did meet a man while he was camping who was kind enough to eventually bring him to San Diego and say, come stay at my place, and then convince him to call his mother.
Wow.
And this is how he got found. So again, we didn't drive up to the house, deliver the guy, and say, here's your son. But we gave her peace of mind that I believe was accurate because the consensus was accurate.
Well, I really admired something you said to me the other day when we were visiting about mm-hmm. this show. You said psychics don't solve crimes, police solve crimes,
yeah,
but psychics, you know, help.
Absolutely.
And I also thought that showed a great lack of ego being involved.
There, you can't really do this and have an ego, because the moment I want to impress you, I can't impress you.
Ah.
That's the way that works. That's your left brain again. That's your programming. So the minute you say something impressive, I guarantee you I will not.
That's true with all of us.
Yes.
Wow. Well, you've given us a lot to think about, and I like the group dynamics, too.
Yeah,
you know, that together we know more.
Well, they're actually, I have a friend, Nancy Marlowe, who was in a group in, I think it was Arizona, called Find Me. And that's what they did. They had a retired police officer who was trying to get the consensus from various psychics about cases that were cold. And
wow.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
I do, too. Wow. All right. Well, thank you for that. Hey, Tatiana, I'm looking at you in your Little Red Riding Hood cape, and I've got to ask you, are you going to a Halloween party after the show?
No, I just wanted to be festive today.
You are festive. Of course, she told us before the show she could have bought us brownies and decided not to, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
They had orange filling, or like Oreos, and they had like the filling of
orange.
Our
psychic friend probably knows I'm lying, and I'm not okay.
Our psychic friend was just wondering, oh, what kind of brownies?
Did you predict this?
Yes.
Well, there is no better way to celebrate Halloween than to tell scary stories and interesting stories of unknown worlds to hopefully keep us up all night. But what we find really scary is not to hear the phones ringing. So please, my friends, give us a call at 713-526-5738. That is Jam KPFT. And let us know you support live storytelling aired every week in Houston. This station has been an icon for the community for so many years. Tatiana, can you tell us what interning with So What's Your Story and at KPFT has meant to you?
Well, I have learned a lot since I've been here. It's been, I think, over a year now. And there's something that I've really taken away here, and it's actually a quote. I believe it was the founder of KPFT. It was Lewis Hill.
Yes.
We actually have the quotes right behind you, Greg. It's, as long as I can create, as long as I can communicate, I can create, and as long as I can create, I am free. So that's one of the best things I've learned from here.
Wow, impressive answer. I didn't tell her I was going to ask
you.
That. Wow, good job, Tatiana. We have had some incredible stories throughout the years. Is there a story that stands out to you as being, you know, that's just stuck with you for one reason or another?
Oh, I have laughed, I've cried, and I've even felt angry in some of these stories. But
and that's true for all of us while we're producing the show. That is true with these stories.
But with when I hosted, I had Chuck Vaughn on here, and he told us a really great story of his journey from biking from downtown at night back to his house, and just the things that he saw, and it was incredible. He saw a dog get clipped. I think he even seen like how the process of a restaurant finishing its day, just observing everything around him.
Well, I'll tell you, KPFT and So What's Your Story has certainly meant the world to me. You know, our regular listeners know that about 3.5 years ago, I was invited by Shannon McKerchie and Dr. Hank to be a guest on this show, and it was just a great experience. And Dr. Hank took a leap of faith and invited me and Warren and Mary to become co-hosts, and that wouldn't happen at any of your big network stations. And it's community radio that makes that possible. And everyone that's been associated with the show, you know, who's come in just a couple of times, they tend to keep coming back, getting more and more involved. And, you know, this is a gem in the fourth biggest city in America, and we need your help to keep it going. So if you like it, please call 713-526-5738. Now, Diane, one thing I want to talk to you about is I've been listening to that inner voice that I believe most of us have all my life. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, the more I listen to it, the more I respect it, the more clear it becomes.
Yes, it is you. We don't listen to ourselves. After a while in life, we listen to what everyone else says. We listen to what the news media says, what we see in books, what we see around us, but we don't listen inside of us. And when you hear that, that is the truest thing you're ever going to hear. You're going to know the truth.
Well, and I'll tell you a story that comes from about 30 years ago this week, as a matter of fact. I was an intern in Washington, D.C., and I found out that we were going to go to New York City for 36 hours. And without missing a beat, I mean, I didn't even think about it. I said to my boss, I said, you know what? While we're there, I'm going to meet Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis.
Wow.
And she goes, we have no free time while we're there. I said, I know, it's just going to happen. So it became a joke within the office. And finally, when we were flying to New York, my boss leaned over and she said, so in the next 36 hours with a solid schedule and no free time, you're meeting Jackie Onassis? I said, I certainly am. But it was just that voice that kept
you
telling me.
You knew it, yes.
And so we went to our hotel, dropped off our bags. We caught a cab to LaGuardia. And this was pre-9/11, so you could go right to the gate.
Right.
And so we're meeting a group from Japan, and they had flown through San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So we're meeting all these Japanese politicians. We're standing there. The first woman off the plane.
Oh, no.
Giant dark glasses. My boss looked at me. She goes, oh, my God. Go talk to her. Go talk to her. So I did, and I said, Miss Onassis, I'm sorry to bother you. My name's Greg Audell. I'm a college student from Texas. And she's not looking at me. And I just start rambling quotes from John and Robert Kennedy. And she took off her glasses and she said, what's your name?
Wow.
I said, Greg. She goes, I want to thank you for stopping me. She goes, I assume most college students don't even know anything about my husband or son-in-law.
Oh, that's wonderful.
She said, you have made my day. I said, ma'am, you have made my day.
That is, see, you actually had a conversation with Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. That's pretty amazing. That's not just meeting her. That's, you know.
But it was that voice. I just knew. I can't explain it. I couldn't have arranged it. I just knew.
Knew it. And that's what I wish people would pay more attention to.
So is my inner voice theory on track in your
opinion?
Absolutely,
because there are plenty of times where they say psychics will tell you they cannot read for friends. And what they're really saying is, I don't want to tell you that you're going to get cancer. I don't want to tell you that you're going to lose your job. I don't want to tell you that your husband is cheating on you. I don't want to tell you any bad news because I love you.
Right.
And so you... If you can listen to your own voice, though, you're going to know much more about what it is.
And let me say, this isn't something that's happened once or twice or 10 times or 20 times.
Over and over.
Yeah. I mean, the more I listen to it, the more I respect it, the more I make a point to listen to it, the more amazing, indescribable things have come.
It really is a language that speaks to us just like the English language speaks to us, but it's an energy language. And I believe that people can learn German, French, and Spanish. They can learn energy. And you obviously are really good at that language.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's I can't take credit for it. I'm just glad someone taught me long ago to listen to it. Well, you, friends, you are celebrating Halloween with scary and interesting tales. On So What's Your Story with guest Diane Gremmel on Houston's KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.1 for our friends in Huntsville. I'm Greg Audell with Tatiana Gago and Floyd the Wonder Dog, and this is the last chance to call in your donations for this half hour of the KPFT fund drive at 713-526-5738. Or go online to kpft.org, then to donations, click your payment, just scroll on down to So What's Your Story as the program you wish to support. Tatiana, can you tell us about some stuff going on Houston's storytelling scene?
Of course, but I got good news. We just got a wonderful donation from Dr. Walter Blanchard, and we want to say thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Blanchard. It really is invigorating to hear that, you know, that not only that people are listening, we love the feedback we get on the Facebook page, but on community radio that you care enough to support us. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn about, you know, the art of telling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and that's located at Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. Be sure to visit the Guild's website. That's at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about upcoming events like Telebration. It's the National Day of Storytelling held on November 17th at the Black Lab on Montrose.
That is going to be a great event, and I encourage everyone to put it on your calendar right now and come out. You will not regret it.
And while you're checking things out on the Guild's page, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every single show since 2008, all listed on the menu under radio program. There are over 400 of them, so you better get started.
I get sucked into listening to them. Sometimes I'm like, just one more, just one more, just one more.
And if you don't have a radio, that's no problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. And why not suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share it with your friends. And we'd love it if you'd like us when you leave.
Please like us.
We love you forever. And So What's Your Story is also on YouTube. And remember our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you will enjoy dazzling stories and get acquainted with Houston's storytelling community. The next one is going to be on November 12th, and the theme is beginnings. So why not begin your storytelling addiction by going to The Moth?
Well, I'll be honest, that's how mine started. In fact, I'm going to tell the story about that, hopefully, if my name gets drawn at the next Moth, is how I came into the world of storytelling, and it was by randomly, accidentally ending up at the Moth one night.
It was a happy accident.
It was a happy accident. Thank you. And thank you, Tatiana. I just learned from the Moth host and our former guest, Dusty Rhodes, that Houston has the largest Moth Story Slam in the entire world. And it really is amazing because this takes place worldwide. And, you know, there's a show on NPR that airs on about 600 stations, I believe. That's just a testament to Houston's reputation as the storytelling capital of America. So I will be there on November 12th. I'll have a story ready to go, and I hope we see you out there as well. Now, Hank, I know you're somewhere out there, even though I can't see you, but it is absolutely incredible to me that we've had over 400 episodes. But what's more amazing is that the first 250 or so were all you, all alone, each and every week. And in case our listeners don't know, can you tell us a little bit about how So What's Your Story came to be?
Sure. Actually, the first 368 were me alone, but I'm not counting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't worry
Thank
about
you.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Then we're
yeah.
well over 400 stories by now, then.
Yeah, 472. But again, who's counting? You know, but listen, this show is a labor of love for all of us, Greg, as you know. But I was a guest on a show that was an open journal in 2008, early 2008. And I don't think it was me, but whoever hosted the show quit a few days later. And I got a call from Ernesto Aguilar.
Was it something you said?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. But Ernesto Aguilar, who was our program manager at the time, gave me a call a few days later and said, listen, I don't know if you remember me, but you did a great job on the show, and I'm wondering if you'd be interested in hosting it. And I said, well, I forget what the show is all about. He said, you can essentially do whatever you want. And I told him, well, I wouldn't mind doing a storytelling show, not unlike An American Life or modeling it after that. And he said to me, and I quote, you know, it's a great, great idea, but I'm not sure anybody would be interested. I said, well, let me give it a shot. So what happened is that the last Friday of every month for the first several years, I was given a shot to do a live storytelling show like we do now. And it really worked well. And I got all these calls saying, Hank, that's not enough. How about some more? So we went weekly. And
what time was that show?
Well, the first one was at 6 a.m. on Mondays. Yeah.
Yeesh.
But believe it or not, people listened in.
That's the scariest thing I heard all night.
We did well enough that we got that gig on Thursday at 10, as you know. That's when you joined me. We did that for a few years until we got this very prime time from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. So we've been doing this a while, and we aim to do it a lot more.
Absolutely, and I thank you for letting us all be a part of it.
Thank you. It's great.
Not just the host and the staff, but I know the audience appreciates it, and that's why they keep coming back each and every week.
I think so. I know so. Thank you, my friend.
Now, I know you and Peggy escaped recently to Gettysburg a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And a few places in the country possess more haunted stories than Gettysburg, and I'm curious, why Gettysburg, Hank?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm a Civil War freak. I love the Civil War, but you know, when you think about Gettysburg, there are all sorts of things that are fascinating. Let me just tell you a little bit of that before we listen to the first couple of stories. You know, by the summer of 1863, General Lee was confident that all was going well for the Confederacy after Chancellorsville and Fredericksburg. And he urged the Confederate President Jefferson Davis to take the war north, thinking that he was going to relieve pressure of the fighting in Virginia and also wanting to harnessing as much needed supplies found in the north, like shoes and the like. So he wanted to take the fight to Cashtown, which was a small village between Chambersburg and Gettysburg. It didn't work out that way because General John Buford located Lee's Army of the Potomac, and then suddenly the attack was on. The battle was unplanned. It was uncontrolled. It was totally chaotic, especially on the first day of the battle. Now, you know, it's really the battlefields and certain locations that are particularly haunted, Greg and everyone else. But imagine, we're talking about 58,000 people and 51,000 horses.
Wow.
In that hallowed ground. And that in and of itself can tell you why it is haunted incarnate, literally. But I want Tatiana to play the first couple of stories and then make a comment, and you'll see what I mean. Tatiana, please.
Traveling east on Wheatfield Road on my way to the house of my boss, Bob Servant. I called Bob from the car phone to tell him I was on my way when up ahead I saw movement of shadows off to the right in the field. I slowed down the van because I thought it was a deer, and since I was driving in Bob's van, I didn't want to wreck it. As I got closer, I saw two figures emerging from the direction of the brush about 50 feet from the road. All of a sudden, it started getting very bright, more than the brightness of the high beams from the van. There was a bright glow. I couldn't talk, and Bob kept saying, "Are you okay?" Finally, I was able to tell him to hold on and not to hang up. He knew by the sound of my voice that something very strange was going on. At this point, two soldiers came walking out of the field toward the road. They looked like they were walking at attention, their chins slightly elevated. They seemed not to notice that I was there, but I had the feeling that they wanted me to notice them. There was a Confederate and a Union soldier. The Confederate soldier was on the left and the Union was on the right. The Union soldier had a mark on his left cheek, with black around the outer part of the mark. You could see where blood had run down his face onto his collar. The Confederate soldier was disheveled and unshaven, and had a light gray jacket, sky blue trousers, black brogans on his feet, and his trousers were tucked into his socks. On his dark brown hat, from what I could make out, it appeared to be either the number 4 or number 9. He was carrying a haversack. The Union soldier had a sack coat and an infantry belt and buckle, with a musket over his right shoulder. The sling appeared to be made out of heavy twine. I wasn't afraid of them, but I had this feeling of despair and grief, as if their feelings were being passed on to me. The two soldiers walked to where the grass meets the road and stopped as if they could not go beyond that point. After I passed them, it became very dark. The brightness was gone. I traveled on to Bob's house and was white as a sheet when I arrived. Bob and I drove back to the spot, but there was nothing there, just the stillness and darkness of the night.
Here's a story that has been around for a while, and those it has happened to will swear it is true. It goes like this, and is always the same. Someone is driving along one of the roads leading into Gettysburg when they see a reenactor, thumbing a ride to town. He is picked up and turns out to be a friendly fellow. The driver feels lucky, because here is a person who obviously knows a lot about the Civil War, and immediately the questions start. What's it like to be a soldier? What about weapons? The food? The conditions? And then the questions about the Battle of Gettysburg. The writer proves quite knowledgeable, except after July 3rd, 1863. It's after that he seems to be lost. But the time spent is interesting, and soon the soldier says, "Stop here. This is where I get out." The driver pulls over, and the passenger hops out and says, "Thanks for the ride." As the car pulls away, the driver notices two things. The soldier is nowhere to be seen, and he is pulling away from the cemetery. Now, you may believe what you will, but the next time you talk to a reenactor, slip in some trick questions just to be sure, like, what is your favorite TV show? Or, have you seen any good movies lately? Or bring up computers. You know, you can't be too sure.
You know, the streets and fields are littered with bodies, and a lot of people don't realize that thousands of soldiers drowned because of torrential rainstorms days after the battle. They were too wounded to move. And one of the constant stories that we hear when we're roaming around the fields of Gettysburg is about these reenactors that the tellers were just suggesting. And these reenactors are people who we think are reenacting the battle. And in fact, they're not. These are people who have been coming up to families, and one Confederate soldier in particular, several times. So many families have reported, bow down to talk to their little girl, and then suddenly fades away. Now, this all sounds weird, but there's a story about a particular Confederate soldier who was disheartened to never see his little girl again. And you hear these stories, and you wonder, my God, there are scores of ghost stories and supernatural incidents that were recorded on the official causes of the battlefield, houses in the field, like the Hummelbau House, which was a resident of an individual who thought that he saw some of these reenactors come right at him. One of the things that I found particularly haunting when Peggy and I were there was Little Round Top, which is a place that means a lot to me. That's where Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, the colonel, for those of you who saw the movie Gettysburg, he was the last flank of the Union Army. And if the Confederates would have gotten through, there's an excellent chance that they would have won the war. And I was there on the hill on Little Round Top. And, Lawrence Chamberlain was a rhetoric professor at Bowdoin. And, of course, I'm a communication professor at UH. And, and I think to myself, what are some of the things that he would have said? What are some of the classic, interesting rhetorical ideas that he did to keep his position and to keep his men motivated. And I was thinking about that stuff. For me, it made good sense. But in any event, there's a lot of great stories about Little Round Top, and Tatiana's going to play one for you right now. Real short one.
It was early July when a few of my friends and I decided to take a day trip to Gettysburg. After visiting the battlefield, we decided to wait until it was dark to check out a story we had heard from a tourist we had talked to in the town. We knew you were forbidden to enter the battlefield after 10 p.m., but we thought we had a better chance of checking out this story late at night. It was sometime after 11 when my friends and I visited Little Round Top to see the G.K. Warren statue. The story was told to us by a tall, thin man with shaggy hair and a short gray beard. He told us, if you walk on the walkway around the statue, you will actually see G.K. Warren's head move. So we took a flashlight and walked up to it. As we were walking, we could hear a noise that sounded like creaking metal. At this point, the hair on the backs of our necks stood up. As we made our way up the hill, the noise became louder until it felt like it was inside us. All of a sudden, just as we got to the statue, the noise stopped. I think I felt my heart stop also. Needless to say, at that instant, we all became true believers as we quickly left the battlefield, never to return at night.
You know, and I've got a couple more that I want us to play, but I think we're going to pause with that one because I want Diane to tell her next story in just a few minutes. But, you know, Gettysburg is just a remarkable place. When you read about it, it's one of the most haunted places in America. The Jenny Wade House is the fourth most haunted house in the country, and that's my next short story. Jenny Wade was the only civilian that was killed during Gettysburg. She was a young girl, 17 years old, who was baking bread for the Union Army in her house. And she was killed by a Confederate sniper. It was a stray bullet that went into the front door. It penetrated her heart, and it killed her immediately. The Farnsworth House, Robert Farnsworth, had a house across the street from Jenny Wade, and that's where Confederate snipers were in the attic shooting on Cemetery Ridge. And the bullets had to go through the Jenny Wade house in order to reach the Union soldiers. So as it turns out, when Jenny Wade was killed, her mother was there, her father was there, another family was there in the second part of the house. It was a duplex. And they couldn't move her, so they took her down to the basement, and she lied there for a while. And the house is supposedly incredibly haunted. Diane may know that this was a house that was on television on the Ghost. I forget the name of the show, but the Ghost Hunters. It's been on several times. And I showed you guys the photo earlier, and we're going to put it on Facebook a little bit later. But I was in the back of the house entering, or I should say exiting. And in order to do so, we had to go up the stairs into a small corridor and then exit. And Peggy, my wife, took a photograph, and we didn't notice anything until later that night. We looked at the photograph, and there is a very clear, transparent, black-and-white image in the window to the left of me. There is no reflection. There is no flash. There is no one around. There is only a woman to the left of me. There is no other explanation except there's an image looking into the window. Black and white, totally, totally transparent. And we've asked people who know, and they say, well, I'm not going to tell you that it's a ghost, but there is no other explanation. So that's my story, my friend, and I am sticking to it.
Did you hear that music when you printed the picture?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I wanted, you know, I wanted Diane's take on that.
It's interesting because what I saw in the picture at first, I didn't see what it was you were talking about. And then when I really looked, I saw two people.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow, yeah.
Sometimes, you know, a lot of paranormal investigators will tell us is that you have to make certain, A, it is not doctored, which I know it's not.
Oh, no.
And B,
I wouldn't know where to start.
Right.
Yeah. I just learned how to use a camera.
There are some there are some interesting things because I know someone who brought me a ghost picture, and when I showed them very carefully, I said, "Do you see the camera in their hand?" And they said, "Yes." You understand what we're saying, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So it was a reflection.
Right.
But that does not look like a reflection, I have to say.
No, no.
So we're going to put this up
on our
page
so our listeners
can check it out, right?
We are. Yeah. Halloween lasts a long time around here. Absolutely. We're going to get you guys a chance to check it out. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now Hank's been talking to us about Haunted Gettysburg, and I think it's fair to say that none of us would like to scamper through the battlefield in the middle of the night like that last story.
No, no.
But Diane, you lived in a haunted house and actually had a relationship with the spirit, I believe. We have to hear this.
Well, it's not that kind of relationship, but...
Well, I didn't mean to imply anything. Excuse me.
Okay. Well, what is interesting, you mentioned being in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s, and I myself lived in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s when I was just out of school, and rents were about on par with New York City at that time. And so, as you know, thousands of dollars if you want to live by yourself in something the size of a bathroom.
Yes.
And I really lucked out. I had taken a job in Washington, D.C., and I heard about a gentleman who was looking for someone. He was an elderly gentleman. He had a beautiful row house in Georgetown, and he rented the top floor out as two apartments. And what I had heard is that for someone who was a good cook and could do laundry, he was willing to exchange an apartment. So I very happily took that job because it really afforded me the freedom to work and put some money back. So the first night I stayed in this house, it's interesting. I took one of the apartments upstairs, and I immediately felt a presence. And while I hadn't really committed myself to being a full-time psychic back then, I was very aware that I picked things up. So I felt somebody was there, but I got feeling like they liked me, that I was not a threat. And the one thing that was going on that kind of scared me for a little bit, I was laying there trying to go to sleep in the bedroom, and there was a captain's walk that went around that floor. And a captain's walk is something that goes all the way around the top floor of a building that allows people to walk around. So as I was laying in bed, I heard footsteps on this all night long. And the only entrance to the captain's walk was through the window in my bedroom. So either someone was trapped out there all night, but I knew something was going on. I spoke with a gentleman the next night and who owned the house, and he told me his wife had died in the very same bedroom that I had slept in, that when she began, she had cancer, and when she had begun to feel too much pain and didn't want to wake him, she went and slept upstairs, and when she really didn't feel well and was still able to, would walk around the captain's walk. So once I understood who was there, it made sense to me that she was just watching out for him. So not too much later, I realized that everything in this man's kitchen was from like 1965 or something. It was very far out of date because he'd never replaced anything after she passed away. So I went and got one of those gigantic trash cans with the wheels on the bottom, the kind you push around. And I started going through the kitchen from cabinet to cabinet, just pulling things out, checking the dates and tossing them. And I looked up towards the sink. There was a backsplash behind the sink that was a brick backsplash. And in the brick was a railroad spike. And on the railroad spike hung a cast iron skillet. Well, I watched this cast iron skillet as it came out slowly to the end of the spike. So it traveled about 6 inches by itself. It hung in midair for about 15 to 30 seconds. And then it hit the ground with a resounding thud. And at that point, because I was used to this type of thing somewhat, I said, "Peg, this is not anything. Time has passed. I have to get rid of this. Gotta go. No harm meant." And I didn't have any trouble after that. But I did notice there was one point. Ted wasn't well, the gentleman who lived in the house. But he wasn't terminally ill for anything we knew. He just never left the second floor. And one day I noticed the keys that I always hung on the door as I walked in the door after parking. My keys were missing from that. And I didn't find them for almost 2 weeks. So it made going to work very difficult and doing shopping very difficult because I didn't have my car. But I later realized Peg wanted someone to stay close to the house because we didn't realize it at the time, but Ted was quite ill. And one day when we realized that he was really not well, there was a gentleman nearby who doing construction who came in and helped carry Ted to the car, and we got him to the hospital. And unfortunately, this poor man had pancreatic cancer. But what I realized in retrospect, he did pass away a couple of weeks later. What I realized in retrospect is how much she was paying attention to watching out for him. During the time I was living in this house, someone moved out of the bigger apartment and I decided to move down the hall to the larger apartment. So someone moved into the smaller one where I had been, the one where the lady had passed away. And this was a very nice, very intelligent woman who moved in, but she tended to wear short skirts and low-cut tops. And I don't think that Peg appreciated it because she had only been in the house for a short time. She locked the door of her apartment, went to the bedroom, closed the door, got in bed, and suddenly she hears that sound of a door opening, which is locked, which is impossible. But she got up, she walked towards the front door of her apartment, and indeed it was open. She had bolted it, and yet it was open. So she closed the locks and relocked the door, and she went back to the bedroom, and she laid down on the bed, and so the next thing I know, I hear someone running down the hall, pounding on my front door, and screaming, "Let me in, let me in." Long story short, this lady did not sleep in her apartment for the remaining time she lived in that house. She slept on the couch in my living room because she was not going back in there. So I definitely can see that this lady, Peg, was watching out for her husband.
Wow.
And I actually drove by there later on after he had passed with the girl who had had the experience. And we both felt they had moved on. We both felt, you know, they're gone. But I had no doubt that there were a lot of instances, those were just a couple, but a lot of instances where she showed herself.
Well, if you think how tied we still feel to those close to us who pass on, doesn't it make sense that they feel just as tied to us?
I feel depending on what they feel we can do for ourselves. I'm sure that when we pass on, there are plenty of things for us to do besides haunt those that are still here. But I do believe the experience I had with him told me that their relationship in life was that she was the brains and the backbone, and he did his engineering and was sweet to her, but he told me she made the financial investment. She figured out what they were going to do, where they were going on vacation, and all of the big decisions were hers. So it is I can understand why she would want to come back and watch out for him.
Wow.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It does make sense. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
You're giving me lots of things to think about. I'll tell you what, let's for a moment, let's switch to a lighter note because we've all been seeing little ghosts and goblins trick-or-treating tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So what is your favorite scary character, Diane?
Well, oh, God, what is my... nothing is that scary to me anymore, but I would say an IRS agent. you know, possibly, you know, the guy who was trying to pry my door open the other day with a screwdriver.
That would qualify.
Two of my favorite scary monsters.
Wow. Well, that would certainly do it. Hank, what about yours?
Guy trying to break open your door with a screwdriver?
Isn't it wonderful living in the suburbs of Houston?
Yeah, wow, yes. That would certainly fall under that.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm thinking Norman Bates. I'm thinking Norman Bates, you know.
He's a good one.
I mean, come on,
Norman,
you know.
Bates,
Mother! Isn't that scary? Mother!
That is definitely pretty
scary.
That's
a guy I dated once, actually.
What about you, Tatiana?
Donald Trump?
Ooh.
Yes! That is, speaking for myself, hey, listen, that is the scariest character I know of.
Here's something incredible. We have two people to thank. We got Brandon, and we have our very good friend, Kent Keith. Kent, you are a gentleman and a scholar. Kent and Brandon have provided us with very generous donations, and we want to thank them on the air.
Thank you both thank you so much. And thank you for being repeat friends of this show. It's very much appreciated. Now, Hank, did you have a poem you wanted to read?
Well, it's not a poem. The poem was the one that I started off the show with. And apparently it didn't make an impression, but that's okay. You know, Look, here's the thing. You know, 8 o'clock, it's still kind of the kids' hour. So I thought that little fun little poem, you know, Little Pumpkins, it was my wife's idea.
It was a fine little poem.
We have two little grandkids, right? I have a 7-year-old grandkid, and we have one that's 7 months old. And we just wanted to dedicate it to them, Five Little Pumpkins.
One of the things about these holidays, I think it does bring back family memories.
Right.
When I was about 8 years old, I had a horrible case of the flu and couldn't go trick-or-treating. And my sister took it upon herself to get she and her friends to go around and collect all this candy for me. And when I think of Halloween, that's one of the memories that really rings true. It's not about the holidays. It's about how the people you care about make you feel.
Absolutely. But this story that I have, you know, you're asking me, you're talking about scary things. I don't know about any of you, but Greg, you're asking the question, who's your scariest character? Let me tell you what always scared me are jack-o'-lanterns, right? Jack-o'-lanterns. And there's actually a story that tells us where jack-o'-lanterns originated. And I thought people would enjoy this one.
Hey, Hank. Where did jack-o'-lanterns originate?
I'm very glad that you asked. Well, we traced the story from the gentleman named Stingy Jack. You know, people have been making jack-o'-lanterns at Halloween's for centuries. And the practice originated from an Irish myth about a man nicknamed Stingy Jack. Well, according to the story, Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink with him. True to his name, Stingy Jack didn't want to pay for his drink, so he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin that Jack could use to buy their drinks. Well, once the devil did so, Jack decided to keep the money and put it in his pocket next to his silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back into his original form. Jack eventually freed the devil under the condition that he would not bother Jack for 1 year and that, should Jack die, he would not claim his soul. Well, the next year, Jack again tricked the devil into climbing into a tree to pick a piece of fruit. While he was up in the tree, Jack carved a sign of the cross into the tree's bark so that the devil could not come down until the devil promised Jack not to bother him for 10 more years. Well, soon after, Jack died. And as the legend goes, God would not allow such an unsavory figure into heaven. The devil, upset by the trick Jack had played on him in keeping his word not to claim his soul, would not allow Jack into hell. He sent Jack off into the dark night with only a burning coal to light his way. Jack put his coal into a carved-out turnip and has been roaming the earth with that ever since. The Irish began to refer to the ghostly figure as Jack of the Lantern, and then simply Jack O'Lantern.
Wow.
Jack O'Lantern.
I'm going to wake up at 3 a.m. with that music in my mind.
Jack O'Lantern.
Well, see, friends, we don't just entertain, we educate you here, because I certainly never knew the story of the Jack O'Lantern, but I'm a better person for knowing that now. Maybe I'll win a bar bet on it. Thank you, Hank. Well, my friends, Warren will be here next week with author Rabbi Seymour Rossel with Jewish folklore, complete with all its wit and wisdom, only right here on So What's Your Story? And, you know, Diane, I have one more inner voice story I want to run past you very quickly.
Okay.
I produce shows, and if you know the comedian Paula Poundstone,
right.
I produce shows for her.
Oh, wow.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
I just knew I was going to and harassed her until she let me. But I like doing shows with one person, one microphone. It's just an easier way to do
right.
it.
Right.
So I was talking to a friend of mine who's in the entertainment business in L.A., and he told me one day, he goes, you know, I had lunch with Vicki Lawrence today. He goes, I think you need to talk to her about doing a show with her. So I was doing my preliminary homework and, you know, thinking about it. And one day I was running late to work, and that inner voice told me to go to a coffee shop that is completely out of my way and it was going to make me much later. But I know to listen to it.
Okay.
So I drove to the coffee shop, and I was kind of going, okay, why am I here? So I walk into the coffee shop. Darn if Vicki Lawrence wasn't standing right in front of me in Houston, Texas, in the coffee shop.
There you go.
And I said, Miss Lawrence, I know this sounds strange, but we have a very good mutual friend. And I said my friend's name, and she looked shocked. She didn't expect to hear this. She was here for a few hours to give a speech. And I said, you know, he thinks we need to consider working together. We had a lovely talk, and it made her feel at ease since I could throw the friend's name in. But again, it's the inner voice.
Those are the times where I think luck and opportunity really meet, is when we listen to that voice, and it sends us places we would never otherwise go.
Amen. And if I can leave you with anything, it's just try listening to that inner voice in a quiet time, you know, and you're not listening for it to tell you what you want it to say, but just listen to what it does say.
Right. If you're creating a story in your left brain about what someone thinks or what someone feels, that's your left brain.
Right.
But if something just pops into you, if you've ever been doing something and the phone rings, you go, oh my God, that's George. And it is George. That happens a lot.
Absolutely.
That is our inner voice, our right brain, already knowing what the script is, and we just have to listen.
Well, thank you, Diane Gremmel. My favorite stories are the ones that help the listener think about something they've never thought much about before, and you certainly gave us a great deal to think about tonight. If folks want to reach you, what is the best way?
Best way is through my website, which is www.dianegrimmel.com. You can set an appointment, watch videos, ask questions, anything you want to do there.
I highly recommend you check out dianegrimmel.com, which is DianeGremmel. And that information will be on our website.
All right.
I look forward
to
having you back on for more thought-provoking stories. Friends, it takes only 90.1 seconds to call 713-526-5738 with kind donations, so live storytelling will forever be at your beck and call right here on 90.1 KPFT Houston. Don't you dare move, because the cool new Flash Gordon Parks is up next. Make 90.1 a part of every day while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out. Join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Greg Audell, and along with the rest of the Still What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends. In your neighborhood, who you gonna call?